Extra time.
He shoots, and it's a goal!
Hello and welcome back to Sunday Vibes Extra Time. Joe Tomlinson is not with us this week. He's in Milan for reasons passing understanding. So Chris Hamill and I will be flying solo, discussing all things Milan on Anything But Clickbait. Then later on, I'll be kicking something I hate out of football in Rosette.
So as usual, we start off with Anything But Clickbait. Today, we're talking about AC Milan. We're going to have a little look at the finances, the context of the team in recent seasons, and delve into who could take over at the club and what they'd find if they did. But we're going to start off with a little bit of information on the financial situation at Milan, because in the last couple of years, it's been tumultuous, to say the least.
Good word.
A Chinese businessman called Li Yonghong acquired AC Milan in 2017 from Silvio Berlusconi, who obviously had owned it for a long time. He paid 740 million euros. Mm. Now, the thing is, he actually took two attempts to take control of it, and he ended up having to borrow capital from an American equity fund called Elliott. They provided him with a loan of about 303 million euros. Now, this loan was absolutely mental. He had to repay it by October this year. It had an interest rate of 11.5%, which is bananas for a loan of that size. And they actually defaulted on it back in July.
Nice. Like,
all the way back in July, couldn't make the payment. So Li failed to repay 32 million, which he had to provide by a certain deadline. And Elliott have now taken control of the club. Now, since that's happened, they announced that a loss has been made of 126 million euros for the 17-18 season. That brings them to a loss of 460 million euros over the last 5 years. That is mental.
And yeah, because of course in this time they've still been spending heavily, right?
Oh yeah, well, this is the thing. I mean, we'll come on to that, I think, but they are also making less money than ever before. So their revenue in 2017 was 192 million euros. In 2004-05, it was 234 million euros. So in the last 13 years, that's not adjusted for inflation, by the way. They actually make 40 million euros less per year than they did in the mid-2000s.
Oh,
that's
wow.
Troubling. Mm. And look, they were doing better in the Champions League then, so they were getting some money, but then they ranked as the third team in the world in terms of revenue per year. Now they're 22nd, and it's the first time they've dropped outside the top 20, according to Deloitte. So it is definitely not a rosy picture for them. And look, part of that is that the Serie A TV deal is nowhere near as good as the Premier League one, but it's not up for renegotiation until 2021.
Mm.
Troubling times.
Do you know what else is troubling? I was doing a bit of reading on the finances myself.
Yeah.
And according to a report in Football Italia, whilst they were trying to...
With James Richards.
...generate new funds, yes, before it was subsequently taken over by Elliott, and this was post-Berlusconi, I think a year after, they submitted in the sort of 18-month period where the Chinese businessman owned the club, where he was at the helm, three different business plans. Ooh. In 1 year.
Is that good?
I'm guessing not. And they estimated that they would earn 188 million euros from new ventures in China in their first business plan and reduce this to 42 million euros in their third business plan.
Oh my God.
So it became pretty clear from the third business plan onwards that they had no plan.
This is like on Monday after payday, where I estimate how much money I'll have left at the end of the month. And then that Tuesday, I'm like, it'll be half that.
And then you're like, oh, shite, phone bill,
electric, gas. And then by the end of the week, I'm just like, you know what? If I'm only 200 quid into my overdraft, I'll take that as a win.
But you know what I found interesting about this third business plan? Because the way it was dismissed ultimately got them back into Europe, at least according to this report that I've read. So
I'm intrigued.
Because it wasn't taken seriously by the bodies, the governing bodies that be, ultimately that got them back into the Europa League. That's why their sanction was overturned, because I think that one of the reasons, it's almost because that wasn't treated fairly. So Elliott used that as sort of leverage to appeal to CAS. And when they requested the settlement details of Inter, PSG and Manchester City when it came to financial fair play, because ultimately
that's good
this is what they failed, this is why they were banned, and they requested the business plan submitted by those clubs in the fallout. Mm-hmm. Their ban was overturned.
Okay, right.
And one of the reasons was because, listen, the third business plan was probably tighter than the others, but you didn't take it seriously. You didn't give it your due diligence that it deserved.
Okay, right.
But yes, things get very shady around that. So have you got any other sort of numbers to throw out before we delve into AC Milan's recent history, their modern history?
Well, there is a little bit of good news in that, yes, they've announced that there's going to be a loss of 126 million euros for the 17-18 season, but those financial losses look so big because Elliot have taken advantage of this kind of upheaval at the club to write off some outstanding debts, which is something Berlusconi used to sell players to finance. Mm. That's why he sold Kaká, for instance. And they've also set aside money for a likely FFP penalty from UEFA. So they're thinking ahead, but they're also thinking, we've broken the rules. Let's set aside money for that, as opposed to let's stop breaking the rules, which I quite like. They've also obviously brought in Ivan Gazidis, the former Arsenal chief executive. They brought in Leonardo and Maldini. Leonardo was there previously as a manager and a director of football, I believe. And Maldini, obviously a legend of the club. So those guys are going to help run transfers and oversee what is clearly a very bold, and I'd say, though I imagine we'll get into this in a minute, quite an intelligent transfer policy. And obviously as well, good news, they've just announced Lucas Paqueta as their first January acquisition. He will be joining from the Brazilian league. So it's not a picture of like straitened circumstances. They've announced a loss, but they haven't said we're going to stop spending. They haven't said, look, we're just going to settle for being a fifth place club. They've said, you know what, like we've now put all of the Berlusconi years behind us. Mm. We've put the upheaval of Lee's very, very short takeover behind us, and we're going to try and get this club back to the top level. And I think that's quite promising.
And I think this is where Gattuso's whole position comes to the fore, because he sort of straddles AC Milan recovering, not being a 10th or 7th place side,
sure,
and AC Milan pushing themselves over the line in terms of becoming a Champions League club again. Mm-hmm. Because whilst they've improved under Gattuso this season,
yes,
is he good enough to secure them fourth place, given the managerial talent in Serie A at current? Allegri, Spalletti, I mean, even Gasperini at Atalanta, they've been knocking on the door for quite some time. They've been impressing. So that's why Wenger, I think, has been linked with the job of late. Although he did tell beIN Sports in the last 24 hours, we're filming this on a Wednesday, is it? I went to Paris yesterday to interview Dani Alves.
It is mercredi.
Big reveal, because can't say anything until Friday. This comes out Sunday, so listeners on the podcast, there's a little exclusive for you. But yes, Wenger has told beIN Sports that this is fake news, hasn't he?
Ultimately. I mean, the thing is, I actually was...
Is he being diplomatic about this?
Well, possibly, but I don't know. I mean, he has got a history of lying to the press, which I understand. But generally speaking, I quite like the idea of Wenger going to Milan. I think it would not be the worst thing for their metrics. Like, I think you were going to dig into their metrics a little bit, but when I look at their shot numbers, their expected goals, all this kind of stuff, I see a team that actually is not badly set up for a Wenger to come in.
No, it's not too far off. There are certain areas where they're actually really impressive. I mean, you have to dig a little deeper to kind of see where they're papering over the cracks slightly at the moment, which we are going to get into. But Wenger makes sense on so many levels, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. In terms of a boardroom, I suppose, in chaos. Berlusconi owned the club for 31 years, and it wasn't a smooth transition to a new owner. And he can oversee tumultuous times, can't he, Arsene Wenger? So from more than just a coaching perspective, yes, I do like the Wenger rumour. It's sensible, given that they've just been given the jobs of late to old players, and that has not worked out. Gattuso probably being the best of the bunch.
Yeah, definitely. So what does the team look like then over the last couple of seasons? Like, because I looked at last season, but to be honest with you, I couldn't be asked to go a season back before that because I was just like, I don't care.
Okay, so, I mean, last season they finished sixth, didn't they? Which didn't really represent progress whatsoever, because the year before that, they also came sixth, Patrick, and they won the Supercoppa. But this was the year when they sold the club, so I suppose Monte will probably feel a little bit hard done by that they didn't get to build on that success because of the off-the-field stuff. 15-16, 7th. 14-15, 10th. Okay, so that's the overview. Previous seasons, like you said, it's ugly reading. So let's just delve
that
into
was a huge
recent
drop
weeks.
Off. Yeah, for like because a couple of years before that, they won the league.
Allegri won the league,
and then they dropped all the way to 10th in the space of about three seasons.
And I think this is where
mental
people start to appreciate Allegri's genius. Like Jesus. In retrospect, like okay, if you're a top club, maybe he went under the radar.
Yeah.
At that point. Anyway, now. The pressure is actually slightly off Gattuso at the time of recording because he's won three in his last three since losing to Betis in the Europa League. These include 3-2 victories over Sampdoria, 2-1 over Genoa and 1-0 over Udinese. But it did take newly stated captain Romagnoli to hit 2-minute last winners. In fact, against Udinese, it was the 97th minute.
Is he the captain now, Romagnoli?
Yeah.
He's only 23, isn't he?
In Benucci's absence. 24? He is. And we're going to profile him a little bit later on because I actually really like him.
Okay.
His numbers are pretty decent as well as him shouldering the goal-scoring burden for AC Milan from centre-back. But this season they have lost to Napoli, they beat Roma, lost to Inter and drew with Atalanta. So
extremely variable.
Yeah, their record against the better boys is debatable.
They're fourth though at the moment.
They
right?
are fourth at the moment and not too far off second.
Yeah, and when I looked at their expected goals, it rates them, like Understat's expected goals model, rates them as the sixth best attacking side in Italy, but the second best defensive side.
Interesting.
And that's quite interesting, though I think that's a better picture of their attack than their shot numbers. Because when I looked at their shot numbers, they're third in Serie A for shots per game with over 18.
Yeah.
And shots on target over 6, they're third for that as well. But I think those numbers are largely a product of some good long-range shooting, and that's likely to regress. This
For
is
sure.
why I like Wenger.
For sure.
This is why I like Wenger.
Because actually, I mean, I did some similar research, spent today, well, technically off work, and I've just rushed in to film this podcast. But I've got to say, we're off to a flyer, mate. I'm really enjoying it. So we didn't really get to talk about what angle we were going to take on this.
Yeah.
But I did see that from their... from the shots that they take, which is 18.3 per game, like you said, only 8.5 come from inside the box.
Yep.
That actually ranks them seventh.
47% of their shots come from outside the box,
wow.
according to Who Scored.
Yeah.
Do you know what it is for Juve?
No.
39%. Do you know what it is for Inter? 36%. Inter have the lowest in the division.
So this doesn't sound that substantial, but it is.
It's not great.
Yeah, it's not great. And they're actually... I mean, on the defensive end, like you said, not too bad, conceding the fewest shots, on 11.5 per 90 after the likes of Torino and Atalanta. So there is room for improvement, but a lot of AC Milan fans feel like all of the deficiencies of the side are actually at the defensive end. Listen to a couple of podcasts today and they're absolutely berating the defence. So not quite as bad, but yeah, like you said, a couple of people running really hot at the start of the season, shooting from distance, like Suso, like Calhanoglu, who we're going to move on to, really keeping them going in the attacking third.
They're quite dependent on Lucas Bilia. He's making five tackles a game when he plays, though, but he's 32.
Jeez.
But when you look at that defence, you see Ricardo Rodriguez, 24, Andrea Conti, 24, Romagnoli, 23-24, Caldara, 24. I'm not sure how old Calabria is, but I think he's in that region as well. And that, to me, is the heart of a really good defence. Mm. I think they probably need a bit more protection in front of them because Kessié is more of an attacking midfielder. Bonaventura is as well. So they do need that kind of defensive presence in the middle of the park. But maybe that's the one key signing they are away from. Say they went to Atletico Madrid, went to our boy, got Rodri in to play under Wenger.
Oh.
At AC Milan, he looked lovely in red and black.
You smash that.
Imagine how good that would be. I think that
almost
would be.
Grabbed your thigh.
There. There's the heart of a really exciting side. Yeah, we're too far away for thigh grabs. Actually,
yeah.
This was an oversight.
And this is one of the things I noticed when I was looking for weaknesses in this side. Actually, there's nothing glaring, but in the centre of the park, they may be lacking a bit of control.
Yes,
and
I'd completely agree.
Kessié has put up decent sort of box to box numbers, but they need someone to complement his skill set. And it
he's like Ramsey. He's very Aaron Ramsey, isn't he?
And it doesn't appear to be Bakayoko, who's had his form has not been consistent to say the least. I mean, he wasn't bad in the game against. I think it may have been Udinese, but he's been much maligned when he's come on because he's made a couple of high profile errors. But
Moving
away from Bakayoko, I've got a little rundown of Romagnoli because
okay.
I thought that
talk to me about Romagnoli.
We could maybe profile a couple of the players.
Let's have a look at the squad
just to take a different angle from our. From a how to fix teams sort of formula. Okay, so while we're talking about the defensive end, and it does have to be tight because four of the last victories have been by a single goal. Romagnoli at the heart of this and really keeping it together, in my opinion. Now, he's 6'2". That's my first note, Patrick Rundstrom.
Nice.
He's 6'2".
He's so 6'2".
He's a good build, and he's a good-looking Italian boy, right?
Oh, my God.
Now,
is this your analysis?
Yeah, this is prime analysis.
He's left-footed.
He is left-footed.
But he has a right foot.
Now, he was at Roma from 2012 to 2015, and he actually broke into the first team, this surprised me, at 17, because he didn't make that many appearances for Roma. And you'll like this. It was under Zdenek Zeman.
Oh, my boy.
Who last coached
the maniac
at Pescara, famously just went for it when they were languishing at the bottom of the table, came in and almost made a fist of it, didn't he? Kind of famed for his attacking football in a 4-3-3 system. He obviously saw something in Romagnoli. This is a guy who's coached all over Italy. He's picked out his fair share of diamonds. So off to a good start
okay.
if you're a 17-year-old okay. Romagnoli. But he didn't really hit it off at the Giallorossi thereafter. Now, his best season in his formative years was, in fact, on loan at Sampdoria in
15-14.
That'd be one for the history books, 15-14, where he made 28 starts and he was involved in 4 goals. So a nice, solid loan spell. And Sampdoria actually had a £2 million right-to-buy clause in his contract, which pretty much...
What is... Italian football is so weird.
Which pretty much summarises Roma's stance on him as a prospect at that time, I think.
Oh, God.
But fortunately for them, they had a reprise in there. They had a buyback clause on his loan of $750,000, which covered the loan fee and then some.
Okay,
got it. They exercised it. That was probably put in last minute on the off chance that he actually had a good season, and he bloody did. And I mean, after that, he was snapped up by AC Milan for €25 million. And the last two seasons have been solid. He's been playing next to Zapata, hasn't he? And a lot of fans last season preferred Romagnoli to Bonucci. He's moved around from a 4-3-3 to a 3-4-3 to a, well, you know, whatever Gattuso is playing with now, which is varied between the two. And he's become the mainstay, he's become the poster boy for this AC Milan side, and he's playing well. And what he is he's a good progressive passer. He's completing around 3 to 4 long balls a game. So I suppose he profiles similarly to Bonucci in that sense. His tackle numbers aren't huge, but his anticipation is clearly good because his interception numbers have always been high.
I'm right that he's left-footed, right?
He is left-footed.
And that is pretty valuable in a young centre-back. Like, there aren't that many like kind of cultured left-footed defenders around.
Yeah, you're not wrong. And I just think that...
I'm scratching my beard, by the way, if that made it onto the mic.
Whatever manager comes in, or if Gattuso stays, they will be building their side around this guy. I mean, he's drawn comparisons from the Milan faithful to Nesta, and they come few and far between, don't they?
Calm down.
But that's sort of my rundown of Romagnoli. So have you got anything else to sort of say about the defence? Obviously, you kind of picked on a few players there. I mean, Abate's old, Zapata's getting old.
Yeah, I mean...
It's a 29-man squad. It's quite
bloated.
That's
what I was just about to say. Like,
there is
dead wood in this squad. I mean, like, I'm looking at their squad here. They've got 11 defenders. They've got 7 strike or forwards. They've got 4 keepers, one of whom is obviously Donnarumma's brother.
I know, I love that. I was like, Donnarumma's 28? No, that's Antonio.
It's the ultimate nonsense. But, yeah, I kind of... So there's definitely stuff that they could do here. They can move a couple of these guys on. Like, I don't think Musacchio plays that much anymore. And while I like him, he's always injured. Like, Bakayoko will go back. Higuain. You know, the thing about Higuain is, getting him as part of the Bonucci thing, I think, makes a lot of sense. And he's going to tide them over for maybe 1-2 years while Cutrone develops. Cutrone's numbers are already great. Like, 2 shots inside the box per game, pretty much. Like, at 20 years old. Last season, I think he got 16 goals, was it, in all competitions?
Yeah, a lot in the Europa League.
Very, very impressive. Yeah, but I think he got 10 in the league, maybe.
Nice.
I think he led them in the league. So there's a lot of promise there, but yeah, God, I mean, Riccardo Montolivo's still there. Yeah. Like, how old is he now?
He has no synovial fluid. The man is literally dust.
Fabio Barini, take his synovial fluid and put it in Montolivo. Like, he's not using it. He's dreadful at football. But anyway, yeah, I look around it and I'm like, 10 of the 18 players they've used so far this season in the league are 25 or under. That's very promising to me. On average, according to Transfermarkt, the age of the squad, 2 full years younger than Inter Milan.
Yeah, I was about to say exactly the same thing. They've future-proofed their side quite well, haven't they? However, I do feel for Gattuso in that had to put up with a lot of bad injuries this campaign. So Caldara, Strinic, Calabria, Biglia, Bonaventura and Calhanoglu all out at the moment.
Mm.
So I think that is where they're struggling. That is why they're grinding out results at the moment. Missing some key components. Like you just said, I didn't know Biglia was putting up tackle numbers like that, but missing him from the centre of the park. Only 10 of the squad over 28, and quite a few of them, like you just said, dispensable. So if we were actually doing a how to fix, this would be quite easy, right? They've actually got quite a nice platform to go ahead and develop.
Yeah, you bring in a DM, and when I look at Suso and Calhanoglu, who we obviously have to talk about, those two guys so far this season are both making over three chances a game. In fact, Calhanoglu's making over four. And when you consider that last season, in the entirety of the Serie A campaign, only six players managed to create over three chances a game for the whole season, that's really exciting to have both of those guys in the squad. You know, that's what frustrates me about them taking so many shots from outside the box, because they have the creators. I mean, I feel like we have to talk about Suso, because Suso is the closest thing this squad has to a superstar. And I think you're much more bullish on him than I am. I really like him. I do like him. His shot selection is fucking horrible. Like, I wrote down, here's my notes on him when I was writing about him. Pound shop Coutinho. that's what I wrote about him.
And I mean, that is very Van Strot.
He's taken 45 shots this season for a total XG of 1.66. Would you like to guess the average XG per shot of his attempts on goal?
I'm guessing it's pretty horrifying.
0.036. Mm. Not good. So that means that his shots basically, let's round it up to 0.04. That means his shots have about a 4% expectation they'll go in. So the fact he's got two goals already is pretty impressive. I mean, he obviously is a superior to average long range shooter. Yeah. That's undeniable. Which I mean when I say pound shot Coutinho. So is Coutinho.
And I mean, being the pound shot version of a £150 million player, £60 million
player. But I think, his shot selection would be less of an issue if, say, you brought Wenger in. Like when I was talking before about how many shots they take from outside the box, they take 47%. Wenger's Arsenal over the last four seasons in the Premier League averaged only 34% of their shots from outside the box. Two of those seasons, they led the league by a long way in terms of how few shots they took from outside the box. Really good at getting high quality chances. And what I think Suso needs is a coach who says to him, you're a great passer of the ball. When you're 30 yards from goal, think about passing it instead of just trying to spank it into the top corner. And look, if you watch his highlights, you are going to see an endless reel of screamers. But even the best players in the world, even the Coutinhos, they don't score from outside the box every game. They don't even do it every three games or every five games. It's rare. It's rarer than people think.
Although he might say to you, you know, Suso, if he was sat here, listen, Van Strot, I have, is it 8 assists already this campaign?
That's fine.
Yeah. I am passing. I am creating.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Like, imagine how
create even more.
Imagine how many you'd have if you weren't shooting at the corner flag, bro. Like, I just think, I mean, look, don't get me wrong. I think it's also helpful sometimes to shoot from range because it moves the defence around. But this Milan side shoots from range plenty. And I think that if somebody said to Suso, have a watch of Andros Townsend and tell me whether you think he's useful to his team when he shoots from anywhere, I think that maybe he'd be like, oh, you know what? Am I the pound shop Coutinho or am I the rich man's Andros Townsend? And I want to head in one direction more than the other. Like,
this is the fork in the road, Suso.
Yeah, exactly.
You can be Townsend or you can be Coutinho.
And I just think he's 24 years old, so there's plenty of potential there. And what it's the same thing with Coutinho. Like, it's me saying this. It's aimed at a player I like. I want him to be the best he can be. And the thing that I like about Wenger, actually, with young players, is he just teaches them to pass. Mm. And then later on, when a coach comes in and gives them a bit more freedom, they get more out of them. So you could argue that's what's happening with Iwobi. Iwobi was taught to pass incisively as a youngster. Now a bit more freedom, a bit more structure. Maybe it looks like he might be starting to make the leap.
It is one of the other areas of disconnect in this AC Milan side, transitioning it into the box. Because, and that is maybe down to a lack of I don't want to say playmaker, but I am a playmaker in the middle, just dictating play, setting the tempo. And we'll move on to that in a little bit. But yes, I did do a little bit of digging on Suso, and I do agree to an extent. He's running so, so hot at the start of the season. So yeah, his average numbers over his career, I pulled them all together, look a little something like this, and they're productive. 2.3 key passes per game, 2.8 shots per night. That is what you'd expect.
That's
if you can
solid.
Maintain that. Exactly, solid. This season, 4 shots per game, 3 key passes per 90, 0.4 goals per game, 0.0 assists per 90.
0.0 how many assists, sorry?
0.8.
Jesus.
The guy is running supernova. Like, he's gone full...
He's hotter than the sun.
Yeah, he's gone full lava.
But that's the thing, though. Like, you look at his assists, and he's got 8. But you look at his expected assists, and he's still got 5, and he's still top of Serie A for that.
Mm.
So even if he comes back down to earth, expected assists currently projects that he'd get an assist every other game. And over the course of the season, that's 19 assists. Like, I mean, that would be amazing. Like, so the fact that he's running a little bit hot is not necessarily the worst thing in terms of I don't think it's giving you a picture of a player he isn't. I think it's giving you an idea that, like, he's a very good player who's currently having a good run of form.
Yeah, you know? when he crashes, he's not going to crash back down to earth. It's going to be a bump at the moment because he is genuinely, been one of Serie A's best creators this season.
Yes.
And, I mean, him and Calhanoglu have had to be. In the last couple games, a lot of fans have been clamouring for Cotrone and Higuain to start. And I think...
What, together?
Together,
whoa,
in a 4-4-2. And I think...
4-4-2.
He has sort of opted for a 4-4-2 Gattuso of late, which is kind of unheard of in Italy. I don't think they've played anything but a 4-3-3 at AC Milan for about 30 years. But it's worked to an extent. Cotrone has quite a unique skill set. He's quite... his work rate is undisputedly high. He's a powerful runner. He can finish from acute angles. Higuain, the more cultured, he's the more likely to drop deep. Cotrone is going to play off him. But they only had 2 shots between them against Udinese. I'm wondering if AC Milan are struggling to deal with a sitting defence and also getting caught cold on a counter. Because I think in the Genoa match, they actually had 24 or 28 shots.
Oh my God.
And only 10 of these were from inside the box. And I think Higuain was responsible for around 3 or 4 of them.
Okay.
So Calhanoglu and Suso are taking pot shots, and it seems to be potentially because of the quality of ball coming into the box from central areas, maybe. They're just taking these shots on from out wide.
Well, that's the thing with Calhanoglu, right? Like, this is why I think his numbers will come back a little bit, because generally speaking, his key passes are very good. But if you look at his open play key passes, they're significantly worse. Like, I think Calhanoglu is one of those creators who's really quite dependent on taking set pieces because he is fantastic at them. And that's not unvaluable, but it's not necessarily sustainable. Like, you want guys who can create from open play. So Kessié creating 2 chances from midfield in open play, that's amazing. That's exactly what you want to see. But Kessié can't bomb on in the way that he wants to, because I think everything stems from this controller missing.
Yeah. Like, no, I agree. And I've got a note down here. One of my notes is Udinese have a player called Lasagna. So
Kevin Lasagna.
He's called
Kevin Lasagna. Yeah.
Kevin Lasagna.
The boy of the Udinese Lasagnas. The Udinese Lasagnas.
Put a smile on my face anyway. Saying this, we could revert back to defence just for a moment, because AC Milan, until the Udinese game, hadn't kept a clean sheet all season. The only team in Serie A to do so. So I've put together a sort of starting lineup that they could feasibly go with injury free.
Oh, I'm excited. Go on.
So why don't we do this and then maybe talk up a couple signings they could make.
Okay.
And then maybe move into some different talking points.
Can I guess bits of your lineup?
You can't. From the current playing personnel?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, so Donnarumma in goal, no point discussing that.
Antonio, obviously.
Yeah, Antonio, the older Donnarumma. Teach the young Donnarumma the ropes. He actually made such a good save against Udinese, low down to his right. I don't know if he's going to become world class yet, Donnarumma.
He's 19 though.
But
he'll become something.
I certainly hope so. I really hope he's going to live up to his to expectation. But okay, so starting with right back, who have you gone for?
Conte.
Yes, 24-year-old Conte.
Yeah, out of Atalanta. Only bought him last season, right? But good, powerful runner, had great attacking numbers, I think, that season. I haven't looked at his deep progressions or anything recently, but he seems like a reasonably active defender. Big guy as well, isn't he?
I'm not quite sure about his size.
Are you serious? I thought the first thing
I
you
only
write
know
down
about
every player.
Romagnoli. I only look at the size of men that I find attractive, all right? 24-year-old Conte, he's actually undergoing a 3-match ban at the moment for insulting a ref in a Primavera game.
Oh, I like that.
Apparently he was filmed punching his locker, so... A hothead, we like that at fullback.
All right. So shall we race through the others? So Caldara Romagnoli, your centre-back,
yes.
I assume. Left back, have you gone Calabria or have you gone Ricardo Rodriguez?
I've gone Ricky Rodriguez.
Yeah.
And I've got down here that he's 26. And
yeah,
I...
Again, a massive bloke.
Yeah, big old bloke, powerful runner. He's got a decent engine on him. But I think that's one of the areas that can be improved.
Okay.
I'm not totally convinced by him at left back. I think they can probably improve. I think he's fine for now. But I think he's dropped off somewhat since they bought him for, what, 25 million? It's quite a sizable fee, wasn't it?
Yeah, something. I don't know. Maybe it was 18. Maybe it was 18.
Okay. I can't remember.
I assume you've gone into a 4-3-3 here.
I have gone 4-3-3. You're right.
So I think you've got new DM, TBC.
Yes, I have one midfielder, TBC.
And then you've got Kessié.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to say Bonaventura.
I have.
Where's Locatelli?
Locatelli's gone.
Where's he gone?
I don't know if he's on loan, but I remember Locatelli, seeing him play for... Oh my, it's going to come to me in a minute. We'll revisit Locatelli. But right. Like you, I also thought he was the wonder boy, you know, 18 months ago. He was supposed to be their Milan's, you know, next big thing, and it didn't really come to fruition, did it?
Weird.
But, we found out where he's gone.
He's at Sassuolo.
Sassuolo!
In fairness, he's 20.
Is he on loan at Sassuolo?
Yes, he's on loan. He's on loan at Sassuolo. He's 20 years old. So let's say Bonaventura for now, Locatelli one day. Does that make sense?
And Sassuolo's been fertile breeding ground, actually, for good young talent.
Have I got all these correct so far?
You have, though I've got a question mark next to Bonaventura.
Because he's 32, isn't he? Or something? Or 29? No, he's 29.
I think he's around 28, 29. He's one of the 10 players I clocked up as being over 28. So, I mean, Diego Laxalt could also play on the left, can't he?
Good point. So if you wanted to play 4-4-2, Laxalt would be great.
Yeah, so they have that option. But I actually don't think... I think down that left-hand side, that's another area they can improve yet again. Maybe we can switch that up. But front threes, I'll whip through it because I think it pretty much talks for itself. I think Suso on the right, Çalhanoğlu on the left. Çalhanoğlu, by the way, against Genoa when they played in a 3-4-3.
Yeah.
Played in, I think, a more central area, but four key passes and four shots.
I think he does make more sense as a 10 because he's not terribly mobile.
Yeah.
Like, I think if you were going to play a pure 4-3-3, I would be tempted to go Castillejo.
He's got...
Did he come in from Villarreal?
Yeah,
he's got good numbers.
Good numbers, considering he's been used by and large as a substitute.
And he's 23, I think. Like, he's quite an interesting little player. And he's exactly the kind of signing that I'd want Milan to make. Like, a guy who looks like he's good baseline numbers. And if he just sticks to those baseline numbers, he'll be a solid contributor. If he blows up, you've got a star on your hands.
I always see Castellano. I kind of think, is that Bernardeschi? That's been my overall impression of him.
Shamu, as I like to think of him.
Watching him play.
I know his name's Samu, but every time I see it, I think Shamu.
It's with his shock of blonde hair, just taking four shots in 20 minutes every time he comes on. He's scored a couple of absolute pearlers this season.
So no Fabio Barini?
Fabio Barini is long gone at this point.
Okay, dead.
In my head.
Alan Halilovic.
He's gone back to Swansea. He's racking up the assists in the Championship.
Probably would.
I mean, Halilovic, what is he now? He's another prodigious young talent that I've not really heard anything about since he moved.
Still young, and they picked him up on a free. So that's, again, the sort of thing where I'm like, you know what, pick him up on a free, pay him pennies. If you don't like him, ship him out. Yeah. Like, I'm absolutely fine with that. That's such a low-risk kind of signing.
They've taken some reasonable gambles, haven't they?
Yeah.
With their acquisitions of late. And I've got Cutrone up front in a 4-3-3.
Nice.
And this is obviously... You know, this could come into play in 18 months' time, and the majority of these players would still be between 23 and 26.
Okay.
Not Ricky Rodriguez, double R, needs replacing. If Wenger comes in, I've got a question mark down here. I mean, would he play a 4-2-3-1, which became his favoured system?
Potentially.
Çalhanoğlu playing in that 10.
Potentially.
Suso, maybe.
Maybe Castillejo.
Kessié dropping back a little bit. Yeah, Castillejo on the other wing.
Well, he did like to play Ramsey in a 2, the maniac. So I wouldn't be surprised if he brought in Granit Xhaka or something, paired him with Kessié.
But there isn't much coming from the bench in this AC Milan side when Cutrone starts. So that's one of my biggest gripes. There's not really a lot of impact players. Not in my 4-3-3. I mean, just that current, when they start together. When Cutrone and Higuain start together, there's not a lot of depth off the bench. So I think you could pick up maybe some aging pros who have still got it. I've got one suggestion in that regard. And, I mean, Ramsey,
if Wenger took over, wouldn't be the worst acquisition on a free.
I don't know if any team can deal with Kessié and Ramsey
in a two.
My wife, or even in a three. I think if they're together, you've got to have somebody in there who's
monstrous,
like,
defensive.
You've got to have like Allen or Kante in there. Like, it's got to be somebody who's like got the power of teleportation.
The other guy I've gone for, okay, who might be worth taking a punt on,
Quagliarella.
He actually scored against them.
Of course he did, mate. He's a machine.
The other week, it was set up by an ex-AC boy whose name escapes me now, actually. It's actually Cesc Fabregas.
Ooh. Oh.
Still got, I mean, his defensive output, not great. But if they're looking for a controller and someone who's still got the Midas touch when it comes to progressive passing and creating chances centrally.
Did you say the Midas touch?
Yeah.
The Midas.
Midas.
We pronounce it Midas. I mean, Midas is more accurate for the Greek us. But you know what? We're getting bogged down. But but like, it was just I couldn't leave it unmentioned.
Being a purveyor of Latin.
By the way, the squad numbers in this team, we didn't even talk about them. They're horrific.
Oh, yes.
The actual squad numbers. Diego Laxão, 93. Gianluigi Donnarumma, 99. Antonio Donnarumma, 90. Franck Kessié, 79.
That's one thing Wenger needs to sort out.
Get out of my... Yeah, he needs to come in and be like, you're number three.
Squad numbers. How unacceptable. Dare you? And Bonaventura is the legendary number five, which is a little bit
violent. Oh, I love that there's no number three, actually. I forgot Maldini. Yeah. In the rafters.
But Cesc is one of my shouts. Now, do you have any transfer targets? Obviously, you're not going too transfer heavy this episode because that would kind of be bordering how to fix territory. And this is more of a casual chat, isn't it?
You know what I look at? I look at Fulham. And I think the championship beckons. The championship beckons. They're so bad.
Hold on, are you going Sarri?
No, I'm thinking Anguissa. If they go down, Anguissa was absolutely sensational for Marseille last season. Absolutely incredible.
You have been blowing his trumpet at the start of
the season. He's so good. Last season it was like six tackles and interceptions again. That's outrageous. Great passer as well. Like, really just good all rounder. So I would think about him. There was Ibrahim Sangare, who I mentioned last week, I think, as a potential kind of midfield wild card. And since I did that, StatsBomb have profiled him. So, tastemaker, just going to say. Or Villarreal, when they sold Rodri to Atletico Madrid, they brought in a guy called Santiago Cáceres, who's also a DM with great passing numbers. Now, he got injured very early on in the season, so hasn't played a huge number of minutes. But when he comes back, I'd have a really good look at him because I think...
Nice.
You know, just pick up a young... Pick up. In fact, I'd maybe go for two. I'd move on Montolivo, Abate, like I'd move on all the old guard, and I would pick up maybe two young defensive midfielders and just be like, one of these motherfuckers is going to work out. Like, and if they don't,
it's nice at that area. Yeah, it's such an obvious area for improvement, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a decent problem for Gattuso to have. And Gattuso, I feel for him if he was to be replaced this season, because I feel like he has progressed the side. His win percentage is very decent this season, which is my segue into our next section, which is you guessing the win percentages of recent Milan managers.
Yes,
just
exactly what
the fans are pining for. I know it. But I think, a good director of football might help. And I've actually heard on the subject of...
Leonardo wasn't terrible.
Yeah. His acquisitions... I've said acquisition about 100 times this
episode. Thiago Silva.
Yeah, his signings have been decent, but...
Pato.
Apparently, Alberto Henrique is falling out of Thomas Tuchel at PSG. And Arsene Wenger subsequently has been linked with a director of football role at PSG.
Oh, Jesus.
So maybe just...
God, I would hate to
hypothetically, let's nip this all in the bud. Arsene Wenger moves to PSG as director of football to work with Thomas Tuchel.
Rancid. Horrible move.
Gattuso keeps his job for now and gets the January transfer window to sign a couple of those players that we just referenced. But compared to recent history, not faring too badly, right?
Oh, so, I've just realised, Milan actually makes no sense for Wenger because Gazidis is there, who kicked him out of Arsenal on his arse.
I mean,
they worked together. They were fine. But I feel like at the end, Gazidis
was
friction,
like... for sure.
Yeah, Gazidis at the end was just like, you're going to the old people. Get out.
Wheeling him out.
Yeah.
Give him his scooter.
Put your adult diaper on and get out. And Wenger was just like, I was in GQ like 2 months ago, mate. Calm down.
Looking suave as well. Right.
All right. So guess the win percentage.
Yes, we have.
Come on.
Since Allegri won the league in 2010-11, I've revisited the last six managers.
Okay.
Because they have been flying through them, haven't they? Seydorf, Inzaghi, Mihailovic, Brocchi.
Oh my God.
Montella and Gattuso.
Okay.
So we have 50%, 35%,
oh, Jesus.
50%, 28%.
Oh my God.
Another 50%, hence why, you know, they keep finishing sixth, and a 57%.
Oh, a 57%. Okay.
Although that last one, a little bit misleading because that's this season. Overall, I think it's probably closer to 53, 54.
Well, if it's this season,
I mean,
that's Gattuso.
Yes.
You've tipped your hand.
47% last season, 57% this season.
Okay.
So
that's fine.
Progress is being made in that regard.
Sure.
Okay, so you've got the top one, but the rest are more interesting. Go for it.
Montella, I assume, is one of the 50s.
He is, yes.
Like, Montella, perfectly competent manager. I was actually thinking this the other day when I was thinking about who Fulham could pick up as a manager. Montella, not the worst.
Not bad.
Not the worst.
That stint at Sevilla has not helped him in that regard.
Seedorf was horrific. So what was the lowest one?
28%.
And the one above that was 35, if I'm remembering correctly. I don't know how long Brocky was in, but the fact I don't remember him being there is not a great sign. Mihailovic was also dreadful. I'm going to go 35
for
Seedorf.
Incorrect. Seedorf, 50% after 22 games.
Okay, so
only lasted sort of that final third of the campaign, didn't he, or two thirds?
So I've got another two 50s.
Yep.
I'll say Pippo for one. Why not? Don't care.
Incorrect, Van Strand.
Jesus.
Pippo and Zaghi, 35%.
Oh, God above. So now I've got Mihailovic left, Brocky and Seedorf, who I have unassigned percentages. Is that right?
No, you've gone through
Seedorf. What Seedorf. Was Seedorf
again? So Mihailovic is...
Seedorf was 50, yeah, sorry.
Mihailovic is another 50. I think you get this. And Brocky ultimately being the worst on 28.
Oh, good God.
So actually, when you look at their recent history, Gattuso doing...
It's a low bar.
Doing okay.
It's a low bar.
Yeah, but... the decision to sack Allegri not aged well whatsoever.
It hasn't aged well. And when you think about it, I was looking at Juve today as a model of how Milan, maybe this can wrap up, like as a model of how Milan could kind of get back to the top. You know, Juve obviously went down with the
recovery post. Yeah.
Yeah. But it actually took them a while. Like when they came back up, I think they had a couple of seventh place finishes. They were not terribly impressive. Everyone thought they were kind of done for because they were tainted. They couldn't really get top players in.
It took until Antonio Conte came in,
right? It basically was Conte. Yeah. They got Conte. They got Pirlo on a free. I mean, it's like it's been careful investment. It was a couple of really good signings, like Arturo Vidal from Bayer Leverkusen, you know, just smashed. Like some of these transfers, cannot bank on
Beppe
getting transfers
Morales
like that.
Did his due diligence.
Yeah, I mean, they're incredible. And obviously the Agnellis are there and they've plenty of money. And so they did have resources behind them. But I really do think that what makes difference between being a mid-table club and a regular, like top four club, is one good manager.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if they were to nail their next appointment, if they were to go out and say, look at the guys who are sitting out there right now, because there are some incredible guys who are unemployed right now. Leonardo Jardim, sitting out there.
Ooh.
Zinedine Zidane, no job. Like I think that there are quite interesting signings they could make, and so maybe if they picked up one of those guys, then we could see a resurgence. Even Roberto Mancini, who I think is probably too good to be doing an international manager job, I think that one of those guys would be quite interesting. And Milan. It's not impossible to get back to the top. There's a lot of transition in Italy at the moment.
I think the fact that Wenger is the forerunner is maybe a good indication of the sort of manager they're looking at. They're looking for, sorry.
Power Trop Man United.
So they're not going to go for any sort of people who are relatively green, let's say. Mm-hmm. I think they'll probably avoid ex-players, going back to our list, wise decision. Maybe looking for a statesman-like figure. Who can sort of help out with the finances to keep things kosher at board level. So, I mean, in that regard, I mean, Conte is one of the more experienced heads out there.
And Conte is out there.
And if they can lure him back in, that would be a real coup, wouldn't it? Now,
I mean, could they?
We're actually 7 minutes late for the live stream, which is going on in the next room.
Ideal.
Armchair fans, Juve versus Manchester United. At the Juventus Stadium. So we're going to do Pato's Row Z, and then we're going to leave. And we're going to put Joe's Row Z in post, and that will be Sunday Vibes Extra Time.
Can I just drop one more managerial
week.
Name on you?
Oh, please. I mean, you went for your phone. You were like that was like, you know, pretty much long jump to
I'm
the
not
sofa
going Lopetegui. I'm not going Petter Bosz. I'm not going Laurent Blanc, all unemployed. I'm going Ralph Hasenhüttl.
Ooh.
Just knocking about, doing nothing.
I mean,
on
he
his
could
arse.
Supercharge their attack for sure.
He would be fun. David Moyes. No, I mean, sorry, I can't even do that. But yeah, Ralph Hasenhüttl, just out there, no job. Interesting. Interesting. Yeah. I would be intrigued and, by bringing that gentleman in.
Roger Schmidt as well. He's cut, kind of cut from the same
cloth. He has got a job.
He's in China though, isn't he?
Yeah, but I mean,
does that count?
Yeah,
he's on a gap year.
He could buy Milan now.
Right, fair enough. Okay, let's do your Rose Z because I haven't got one this week. You and Joe have, and I'm intrigued to hear yours because you were quite excited to get this one off your chest, weren't you?
Well, recently Der Spiegel have been covering football leaks information. Some documents have basically come to light and they've got some which are apparently from Man City executives. Apparently, I should say. Where they're basically talking about how to bypass financial fair play. And I could talk about that. I could talk about the corruption behind the scenes where they say, look, we need to make 10 million out of somewhere to cover our FFP obligations. And the only solution left would be an additional amount of AD sponsorship revenues. AD stands for Abu Dhabi, that would cover the gap. That's troubling. I could talk about the fact that Etihad Airlines is led by Sheikh Mansour's half-brother, and that Etisalat, which is a Abu Dhabi telecommunications company, the Abu Dhabi Tourism Authority, ABA, which is an Abu Dhabi investment firm, that these all advertise with Man City. I could talk about that, but that's
it's actually a meaty topic. It probably deserves its own podcast.
I think we should maybe talk about it, but that's actually not my issue. My issue is corrupt nations using football clubs to launder their international reputation.
Okay.
That is what I don't like. I think that violating the ethics of competition in football is way less important than the way that oppressive regimes are using the game to market themselves to the world. And the irony of that is that, of course, there is no culture in Abu Dhabi. It's just a bigger version of what you have in the West. It's for people who can't tell the difference between expensive and tasteful. It's Disneyland for corrupt capitalists. And I think that this is all or nothing. We all watched All or Nothing and kind of enjoyed it, but it felt like a commercial for Abu Dhabi at times. It sort of shows it as like this bourgeois paradise where everything's clean, the streets are clean, the money's clean, the politics are clean, when they're clearly not. Like Khaldun Al Mubarak, people were talking about him afterwards. I saw like Man City fans on Twitter saying, we're so lucky to have such a humble, intelligent guy as our chief executive. He's not your chief executive. He was on the executive council of Abu Dhabi. He is an Abu Dhabi politician. He's one of the closest advisors to the royal family of the United Arab Emirates. And City CEO is way, way down his list of jobs, whatever the fans think. That's not his priority. It's fundamentally a way for them to transition from an oil-based economy to a tourism-based economy because the oil is running out and has been for a long while. There's very, very little left of it. And so I think
the politicisation of football is that the overarching thing?
No, because football's always been political. Sport is political. Whenever people say keep politics out of sport, I think that's nonsense. You can't do that. But what I don't like is the way that these clubs are perfectly willing to take money from anybody so long as the money keeps coming. Arsenal have just signed a sleeve sponsorship with Visit Rwanda, despite an oppressive regime led by Paul Kagame, which has been in place for a long time now. They don't mind so long as the money keeps coming in. And the United Arab Emirates, I think, is undeniably a force for evil in Asia. I mean, their troops have run torture camps in Yemen. Activists have been tortured and deported. Flogging and stoning are still common. Migrant workers have their passports taken when they come in and get told that for the first 2 years, they'll be working for free because you pay for your flight and your food before you start earning money. Female domestic workers are subject to sexual abuse. You know, they have little protection under the law. It's essentially a slave state. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that other countries are perfect because I'm sure that's what people will imply. And I'm also not saying this because I'm envious of Manchester City or PSG, who are in exactly the same boat. And it really annoys me, actually, that some football fans use this stuff as a way just to criticise other clubs. You know, they use it as kind of like a football insult, like on the terraces. And it's not that. It's far more important than that. People are dying in these countries. And I just resent the way that we are being, that football is being used as propaganda for corrupt governments who are trying to change the way they're seen around the world in order to better their economic situation.
Buying that goodwill with good players.
It's genuinely staggering to me. And I just think that it seems like if you're not a football player or a football manager of the highest level in Abu Dhabi, you perhaps won't have the greatest time. And I don't know. I just object to the way that we are invited to accept these things as commonplace in football. I don't think it's good enough. I think everyone should care about this, including Man City fans. You can say, look, we're delighted that we won the league, but also we are taking money from a government which tolerates, you know, the presence, financially speaking, of various international crime syndicates, including the Taliban, including Daesh, because it makes them better off. That is not good enough in my mind. Okay. And I think as football fans, we have an obligation to talk about these things.
I'm becoming complicit in the act as a result of supporting said clubs in the way we're supporting them.
Yeah, so a little bit ranty.
I genuinely didn't know a little bit that's what you're bringing to the table. And I was fascinated. And I think, I mean, tonally, that was very different from our opening gambit, wasn't it?
It was interesting.
Clearly,
it was an interesting
clearly
transition.
It's something you wanted to say. And you said it very eloquently, mate. But let's get out of here because we've got a live stream to rock up on.
I enjoyed that.
Okay, yeah, nice one, mate. That was quite hastily thrown together Sunday Vibes Extra Time this week, guys, but I actually really enjoyed doing a bit more reading on AC Milan. Fascinating club. Serie A has definitely recaptured the imagination of the football neutral, hasn't it, in the last 3 or 4 years? Not just because of Ronaldo, mainly Napoli, coming back to the fore, the youth that Atalanta are producing.
Lazio.
Yeah, Inter and AC Milan. Are they on the cusp of, you know, reclaiming former glories, or are they going to become messes again? It's all very, very interesting. Now, we're going to try and put out a podcast each week. I'm going to sort out our schedule moving forward from here on in, aren't we, to ensure that happens. But guys, if you haven't listened to the previous two, where we try and fix Manchester United and Real Madrid, please go back and do so. And hit us up on our Twitters and let us know what you'd like us to talk about in future episodes.
Yep.
But, you know, for now, take care and, you know, just hold those that are close to you and spread positivity.
Wow. All right, bye.
Bye.